What is up, ladies and gentlemen? It is your favorite, and I say that with a large pinch of salt. Yarn spinners, it's Tommy Knight, Tommy the Knight Knight.
Heyo,
and it's me. So,
who are you? Tell them, because this is probably the first time they're listening.
I am Batman.
You are Fat Man.
I am Fat Man. Yeah.
You are Bayesian.
You are a racist fat shamer. That's what you are. Sure. Isn't it weird how being negative towards a fat person is called fat shaming?
It's very interesting. It's a bit odd. I don't really. I know we have spoken again. We've spoken about fat shaming, but I don't. What is fat shaming exactly?
Well, this is it, right? So it's fat shaming can be as harsh as, mate, you need to fucking drop a few pounds.
Right.
To as much as, you really going to wear that? It's literally as bad as that. Or
go up to, come on, guys, someone butter up the door frame because she's not getting through without it.
Yeah. Or it's like, oh, you know, are you really going to order dessert?
That's passive aggressive, though, surely.
But that's still within the fat shaming realm. It's just passive aggressive fat shaming.
So where does concern then become fat shaming?
Well, this is an issue for me, right? So,
what, fat?
I don't think it can be. I don't think you can talk, but I don't think it can be resolved. If you see what I mean, because let's face it, if you're fat, if you're overweight, right?
Yeah.
I think there's an optimum weight to the composition of your body. Obviously, yes. If you're 6'7", it is unthinkable for you to be 70 kilos.
Yes.
If you're a massive gym goer and you're lifting weights all the time, it's impossible for you to be 70 kg and be healthy, like, you know, if you're building mass.
Yeah.
But again, not to everyone, right? So it is about natural composition. It's all proportionality.
Yeah.
The issue that people have is that, well, if you call me fat, then some people will stick up for me and say, that's fat shaming. Never mind the fact that if you're overweight, there's a higher risk of diabetes, higher risk of heart disease, higher risk of cancer, et cetera, et cetera.
Fat shaming diseases. They killed me because I'm fat.
Well, did we talk about these two guys who basically who are scientists? I think they're psychiatrists or psychologists, and they released a paper on patriarchy.
Okay.
And what they did is they actually released a paper which was a direct copy of Mein Kampf and replaced, you know, Nazi with patriarchy, or like Jews with patriarchy and Nazi with feminism or something like that.
Okay.
And it got published.
Wow. That's astounding.
And the reason they did that is to show the scientific community and the public at large how farcical the scientific community is becoming.
Yeah, I can appreciate that.
And I think I sent you an article from an Australian professor who, I think she's a she, I think she identifies as a she.
Okay.
Biologically, she's a woman. And she wrote about how obesity is actually a patriarchal concept. As in the word obesity used to control the population.
Did she publish a paper saying this?
Yes.
Who the fuck is printing that? Who is publishing that?
Well, the issue is that these two guys that published the Mein Kampf.
Yes.
I mean, that was amazing.
Yeah.
Is that they actually, they sort of shined a light on this. which is how I learned about it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was interesting hearing them talk about it, because what they're saying is, look, we are published scientists. That's fine. All we want to know, all we want to show is how silly this world's becoming, how political correctness is now scientific. It reached the scientific realm where facts are not even important anymore. I mean, it's scary.
It's really scary. It's really, really scary. And it's dangerous, because science is obviously supposed to be the progression of our species, and things like things getting published like that, I think it's dangerous. I think it's just dragging us backwards, isn't it?
Well, it is. As you said, it's kind of, imagine if someone prints a paper saying that they believe that the Newtonian laws are actually not accurate and they're part of a patriarchal system.
Yeah. It's really, really bad. It's really bad for the scientific community and society as a whole. Who reviews these papers? I'm sure that papers are supposed to be peer-reviewed before they're published.
Hopefully.
Well, you would have thought so. But, you know, who are the peers that are reading this? It's frightening. I don't really understand where she's coming from in terms of how obesity can be anything to do with a patriarchal society.
Mostly because what she says is that it's used by men, it's used by men to basically, how do you call it, to oppress people and force them into a certain system.
Right.
But she's not the only one. So an Arizona State University professor has expressed disappointment at the result of a study she conducted with around 20 women, all of whom consider gaining 100 pounds to be a negative thing. She expected them to embrace her views of fatness as a liberatory experience.
What's liberating about being fat?
Well, so Brianne Fars, a self-described fat woman who teaches women and gender studies at ASU, I assume it's Arizona State University, was dismayed by the study in which no participant described gaining 100 pounds as a positive thing to imagine. Now, 100 pounds is a lot, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah, I think so. Quite a lot. I don't know the mass, you know, the conversions.
Kilos. So if you put on 45 kilos now, Tom, you'd be 245 kilos.
I mean, where are you getting my weight from?
So
I don't measure myself in kilos.
Well, okay. 45 kilos is, I don't know, 6 stone, 7 stone.
Wow. I mean, I'm 16 and a half stone right now.
So imagine another 6 on you.
That would push me well over the 20 stone barrier. I would be rotund. I'm fat now. Well, I'm podgy. Winter fat.
You're fat. So she says, okay.
Taking you to court, mate.
So this professor, Brianne Fars, describes fatness as liberatory from the shackles of patriarchal society, claims that obesity is only considered unattractive because of patriarchy, sexism, and oppression of women. So after reading that paper and those kind of articles, I've asked my friends who are girls, what would you do if a guy called you fat?
Okay.
And they said, obviously they said we would be offended, you know, they shouldn't say that. And I said, okay. But what if your boyfriend was putting on 45 kilos, let's say? Say you were putting on 45 kilos. Do you think your girlfriend would say something?
Well, she tells me to put the fork down now. So, yeah, of course she would.
So I'd, you know, this whole thing, I think there's it's very one-sided. It's very it's a very one-sided argument at the moment, because they're saying that it's all patriarchal, but actually I think it's a human thing to do.
Yeah.
Women can call their boyfriends fat as much as men can. You don't see many obese people on the front of Men's Health. And yet Cosmopolitan released a cover with an obese woman.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm all for body celebration. I'm all for body image celebration. That's not an issue. The issue is when you say that it's a patriarchal system of oppression, or when you say that it's healthy. That's what I have an issue with.
Yeah.
If you have a fat woman on your front cover, I don't really care about that. That's fine. Fat people are shamed into, you know, some get depressed, etc. I get it. But when you tell them that they are right or that they're correct, I have an issue with that.
Yeah. I personally have an issue with putting
kids
overweight people into, well, let's not, into that position anyway. I don't think that it's something that should be celebrated personally, because it's unhealthy.
Yeah, yeah.
I really don't think that you know, massive 15, 18, 20 stone men or women should be put onto a glossy magazine and celebrated. Do you know what I mean? High fives, everyone. Well done.
But I don't think they are. I think this is the thing. I don't think men are celebrated as fat.
No, but I'm saying if it's a level playing field, and if it's okay for women, then it should be okay for men. But in that circumstance, I don't think either should be okay, because it spreads a really bad message. It's unhealthy. The statistics are scary. 1 in 3 children now are overweight.
In the UK or globally?
I think that's just in the UK, but I could be wrong.
That's crazy.
That's a horrendous statistic.
And that's...
Even my friend at work said, and he's an active guy and he takes his kid out cycling and stuff, and he said, I'm shocked at how much weight my son's putting on. I'm having to drag him outside, because obviously you can't watch him 24/7. He's 10, 11 years old.
How much of it is diet?
I don't know. I didn't ask, but...
Because that's the other thing, that, you know, like Ricky Gervais says, losing weight is not a hard equation. You burn calories, you burn more calories than you consume, right?
Yeah. Yeah, if you eat more calories than you burn off, you put on weight.
And it's also the kind of calories. So if you're eating sweets and processed flour and all that kind of stuff, obviously you're going to get fat. Whereas if you eat fruit and veg, et cetera, et cetera, you're going to be all right.
Mm-hmm.
So I think people need to be educated about health, really, and about
and
what place diet has in health.
I think it should probably have a place in the education system.
Yeah, but it's also parents. At the end of the day...
Of course, 100%. But you know, you can't account for every child having the parent. Not every parent is perfect, and I don't think that you can just say, oh, it's down to the parents, because some parents are lazy. Some parents don't have the education for it.
No.
So in some cases, it should be the children bringing it home and saying, actually, Mum, I don't want a Rustler burger. I'd fucking love some broccoli.
So are you in... do you agree with the nanny state in that sense?
You'd have to describe it to me first.
So a nanny state is basically the one that tells people how they should be, what they should do, how they should act, which is normally the place of a parent, but they do their job for them.
Okay. I don't really think that you can just tar and feather everything. I think everything is circumstantial. You know, there should perhaps be some sort of guidance. So maybe education systems like schools or whatever, if they can see, or if a child says, I'm really worried actually because I'm having these lessons and they're saying I should eat 5 fruit and veg a day, but I'm hardly getting 2. Then maybe the parents could get called in voluntarily and say, look, we don't want to impose on your methods or anything, but would you like a free 2 or 3 hour lesson you know, one every week or something, on how to prepare a healthy diet. Is that something that would interest you? If not, you know, fine, you're not obliged to, but just know that it is there.
But I think a lot of the time people will take it as an offense. They'll presume that what is being communicated by the school is that they don't know how to rear their kids, and they don't know how to bring their kids up.
No, you're not necessarily. You don't have to be a bad parent to have a bad diet. You know what I mean? If I'm not saying that they should be judged, because some parents just may not have had the same educational needs. They may not know.
Yeah, but then
they may not know how to make a good meal, and the parents shouldn't be punished for it.
No, but I think the way that people will react to it is saying, A, are you saying that I can't raise my kids properly? B, we can't afford to buy fruit and veg, which is why we buy whatever we buy. And C, why you make me feel embarrassed about the fact that I can't cook?
I would say the issue has been raised by your child. You were sent a letter that says your child has requested that we get in touch with you in reference to diet. He feels like he's not getting, you know, do you know what I mean? There's ways around it where you could be diplomatic. And if people want to come in on their soapbox and their high horse and say, are you judging my parent skills? If it was me, I would say, no, I'm responding to your child saying he doesn't feel like he's getting a good enough diet. What's the problem? Why be embarrassed about not being able to cook?
No, I agree with you.
And if you're going to come in, if you're going to come in on the defensive, then probably you're a shit parent.
I agree with you, but I think a lot of parents will take offense to that. I think a lot of parents will take offense to that, and I think a lot of them.
Well, I think it's like what we said yesterday to each other. People need to fucking man up. Get out of being sensitive.
You can't say that.
I can, and I just did.
That's sexist.
Do you know what I mean? Why be? All right, fine. People need to Homo sapien up. Do you know what I mean? Just it. You know, accept a flaw if it's there, and learn and grow, rather than be obstinate and throw obstacles in the way and be difficult. Just fucking accept a lesson, accept a helping hand, accept an olive branch, and be better and have a better diet. You probably won't be such a fucking miserable cunt if you have all of your fruit and veg every day and drink enough water. You probably find your fucking mood will pick up and you want to go outside and walk the dog rather than sit inside and watch fucking Coronation Street and die a very slow death.
Well, you painted a very clear picture of what class of society you're referring to.
Well, any of them. any of them.
Personally,
you don't have to have millions in the bank to afford fruit and veg, I'm just saying.
I think you're right. I think you're right. But I think it's pride gets in the way. I think a lot of the time pride will get in the way and people will start to get...
Well, what's that famous phrase about pride?
Go on.
Pride cometh before the fall?
Well, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. And I think, but people will react to it badly. If schools start telling parents that they're not, which is what they're saying, you're not bringing your kids up properly, according to our standards, and you know, and standards have to be defined. And I think a lot of obese people are actually quite happy about this. A lot of bad parents are actually happy about their kids, or sorry, their society saying that fatness should be accepted as normal, because it kind of gives them indirectly a get out of jail free card.
Yeah, and that's not right. You shouldn't have a get out of jail free card when it comes to raising a child, because they're the future. You know, how can you expect a society to get better? If you look at, you know, you can look at, you can essentially look at older civilizations now by going to undeveloped countries and whatnot. And a recurring theme that you see, a constant pattern, is that people learn from their elders, and lessons are always taught, and are never shunned.
Yeah.
There's no pride there. People always listen to the lesson from the wiser ones. Do you know what I mean? If that's, that is a perfect model for society.
Yes.
It
that's
is.
Not where we are.
I know it's not where we are, but that makes us more primitive.
Yeah, absolutely.
We have all this technology and all the, you know, we have so many advancements and we can knock up a skyscraper in next to no time and send people to the moon and send satellites to Mars and all this, that and the other. But you can't take a fucking lesson because your child won't eat a banana or doesn't know what one is.
It is scary that I read an article recently that children couldn't identify some vegetables.
I mean, that's fucking scary, man. I mean, that's ridiculous.
We can find
and
it.
Yet, a lot of these kids, their role models are, you know, sportsmen
yeah.
and women. Why can't you make it appeal that
so
way?
So this is.
You know what I mean?
Sorry to interrupt. This is in 2015, 1 in 10 British kids don't know apples grow on trees.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah. In 2018, this year, May the 10th, British parents giving up on convincing kids to eat fruit and vegetables because they just don't like them.
Why do they need to be convinced? Why do they need convincing?
Oh, mate, it's a crazy notion when your kid decides, when they have no idea, and they decide actually what diet they should have. I'm not saying that children can't have their favorite foods. We all have those favorite foods from our childhood that we potentially still love. I was always brought up, you know, with fruit and veg on the table. And fruit, I actually love because it's nature's candy. That's what it was called.
Yeah, exactly. I love fruit.
All of that. So it's kind of, I find it, like yourself, it's frustrating that kids are going. And the issue is that it's becoming a social thing because you go to school as a child and your parents might tell you to eat fruit and veg. But the kids that are not being fed fruit and veg at home are bringing in sweets and crisps and whatever and chocolate and
saturated
and that
fat.
Becomes cool. So it becomes uncool to eat healthy.
Yeah. I just don't understand. I've never understood it. I've never had a problem in all my life with eating veg. My parents have never had to say to me, Tom, eat all your veg. The only time that's ever happened is if I'm full.
Yeah, or there's something you particularly don't like, which I understand. You know, some people do like.
Yeah, fine. Everyone has taste.
Yeah, exactly. But that doesn't mean that they hate all veg. You know, that doesn't mean that they have to. You know, do salads. I'm pretty sure everyone's fine with salads. But so going from one type of health to another, you brought up this topic offline about gambling. Do you want to describe what the latest is on gambling and advertisement?
So, basically, gambling firms that are part of the Remote Gambling Association, so people like Bet365 and Ladbrokes, they have voluntarily struck a deal to stop advertising during live sports broadcasts on television. So they're calling it whistle-to-whistle.
Do you want to describe what that is?
Advertising.
What whistle-to-whistle means?
Well, from the start of the game to the very end of it, there will be no advertisement of betting on television.
So currently, just to describe for people who don't live in the UK, and I'm sure this goes on in your countries too, what happens is at the start of each game, in the middle of each game, and at the end of each game, you have gambling adverts. Place your bets now.
A bombardment.
Yeah, yeah. Place your bets now, blah, blah. A lot of football in the UK is sponsored by gambling companies. So the whole plan is, because gambling addiction has become a huge topic in the UK, the whole issue is around, well, how do you stop people from gambling? And what they've done is they've reduced the maximum amount of cash they can spend at a slot machine, for example, in the UK. And one of the one of the ways that they're going to try and do it is to ban gambling adverts during game times, because that's when people gamble most, and they will actually, during the game, i.e. at halftime of the game, they will advertise odds on the next scorer or the final outcome of the game or whatever. So it's trying to stop.
Yeah,
it's trying to stop tempting people to gamble.
Yeah, it's another attempt at it, because I'm not sure when it came in. I think it was maybe last year, with the slogan that they created. You know, when the fun stops, stop.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there were various adverts, and they had to have this when the fun stops, stop. But the thing is, the thing that's always irritated me, I actually quite like this, because I'm sick of seeing betting adverts. And the irritating thing is that all these advertising rights, they only go to the highest bidder. You know, if a fruit and veg company wanted to advertise at primetime TV, they'd have to shell out millions. And that says to me, because the thing that you said earlier, offline, about there being 90 minutes of betting advertisement during the World Cup. You think, like, each advert's like, what, 30 seconds? So you essentially have a full football game's worth of betting adverts non-stop.
No, I mean,
and that's frightening. But that says to me, look how much money they're earning. Prime time. During the World Cup final, how much do you think a 30, 40 second segment of airtime is?
Oh, yeah, worth I agree. I think it's
astronomical.
I think it's a good move. Just like they banned smoking advertisement in the 90s, I think. Alcohol was banned before the watershed, and this will also be before the watershed. So before 9 p.m., any gambling adverts during sporting events will be forbidden.
There were loopholes, though, weren't there? There were a few discrepancies. I think, was it horse racing?
Yeah, horse racing won't be, because they rely heavily on it. I don't understand why that is. But then, to be fair, horse racing is not as ubiquitous as football is.
No, it's not. It's not on TV. Yeah, it used to be Channel 4, didn't it? The racing in the morning on Sundays with John McGoldrick.
Yeah, you've got the Grand National and Cheltenham Cup, which are a bit more televised events, but they are literally two events during the year that are the most prominent on terrestrial television. This is they're obviously channel.
So do you think I was just going to ask, do you think that this spells not the end but a decline in
well
gambling?
As I was saying to you earlier, it kind of I think the reason why they volunteered this, it's partly because they're getting a bad rep in the press and from the ministers, and this was inevitable. Mm-hmm. So they're sort of meeting them at the pass. But the other reason is, I think, because look, when I watch YouTube videos, 95, I would say, percent of my YouTube videos, the adverts before the video starts and during are gambling. So. Mm-hmm. I would question whether actually it's as effective as they think, because the medium is shifting and the landscape is shifting from traditional television advertisement to internet advertisement more and more. And I know I was saying that, for example, the Champions League final was shown on YouTube, and that had a lot of adverts on it. So they can still reach people out that way. But I mean, it's a better move than no move. I must agree with that. I just wonder whether it will hit the gambling industries that hard. I do wonder.
Probably not. People still know it's there. People you know, they have their laptops out or their iPads whilst they're watching.
And if you're addicted, you're addicted. Whether you see an advert for it or not, I don't think it matters really.
I find it a very strange addiction. It's a very odd addiction.
So,
can it actually be classified as such?
Yeah.
So you can be dependent on it.
Yes. Is it? Let me just.
It's the dopamine, isn't it? It will release. Let me just.
Let me just get a dictionary definition of addiction. So addiction is the fact or condition of being addicted to a particular substance or activity. Well, that's a shit definition because you shouldn't use the actual word when describing it.
Yeah, true. Try
Jesus
again.
Christ. Sorry for any Christians out there.
Yeah, right.
So yeah, so I would describe addiction as a habit which, and it has to be a habit which compels you to do it when it's not for your benefit. So food addiction, you keep eating even though it's bad for you. Smoking is an addiction, you keep smoking even though it's bad for you.
So the NHS defines addiction as not having control over doing, taking, or using something to the point where it could be harmful to
you. There we go. Yeah.
And funnily enough, the next sentence says addiction is mostly most commonly associated with, and there are four headlines here, and this is not the order I would have thought they would have gone in. Gambling, number one, then drugs, addiction, and alcohol.
Are they
nicotine.
In order of?
I'm not sure if they're in order of severity, but if I was to write something about addiction, probably drugs and alcohol would have preceded gambling. Just, you know, if I was writing it, and I find that quite striking that the first one on there is gambling.
I think a lot of people gamble, and I think this is why they gamble. Have you heard of the dollar auction game theory?
No.
So it's the dollar auction game theory is designed by an economist called Martin Shubik. And it's it describes a paradox of rational choice theory, which assumes that the person will always make the most logical decision. But actually, it shows you that people don't. So in this game, and I've seen this live actually, you have a pound and you auction that pound off between four people. Now, the rationality behind that is actually you want to buy the pound for 99 pence at the maximum.
Yes.
Because you still make a penny profit. However, what will happen is people will start bidding and it'll get to 99 pence and someone will say, oh, fuck it, bite the bullet. I'll buy the pound for a pound. I'm not losing any money. But then the person that you outbid will buy the pound for £1 and 1p and they will keep going until the auction stops. Now, the issue there is that what you have is what becomes the pursuit of profit suddenly becomes the pursuit of lowest loss. So it becomes not, oh, I can make a penny. It becomes, well, I've only lost a penny. And I think that's what addiction does to you, is you start chasing, oh, I'm going to make a tenner. And then you lose your tenner. And then you say, well, I'm only going to lose 50 quid. I'm going to give myself 50 quid. And then you lose your 50 quid. And you say, well, okay, 100 quid then. It's only 100 quid. Because there's always more that you could lose.
Yeah.
So you always shift the ceiling up and up and up. And what it illustrates is that rational behavior can lead to an undesirable outcome. So it kind of shows you that the way that the gambler thinks is not about, at some point, a gambling addict thinks not about how much he can make, but how little he lost. And I think that's when the tables turn from you just enjoying casual gambling, like you gamble, right?
Occasionally, I haven't gambled for a long time.
But you will put a bet on Tottenham winning, and if you lose, you stop. An addict will keep going because he'll always think, "Well, I'm not losing as much as I thought I would be." You know, it becomes fucked up when you go to a casino and you take out 50 quid. And I used to do this, and you say, "I'm only going to afford to lose 50 quid tonight." That's scary.
Yeah.
But when you are setting yourself up to lose 50 pounds from the off, that means it means two things. You know that the house is always winning, so you know you're going to lose the money. And secondly, you will compel yourself and you will convince yourself that actually you're only losing 50 pounds.
Have you watched Louis Theroux's documentary on gambling in Las Vegas with the high rollers? So it's quite old. I think it's like early 2000s, maybe. And he goes to Vegas.
By the way, well-known casino. Isn't it fucked up that early 2000s is 18 years ago? It's a legal person ago. Sorry. Yeah. Keep going.
Yes. only in the UK. In America, it'd have to be 21. So he goes to Las Vegas and he goes to a well-known casino and he meets one of the guys there that looks after the high rollers and he sorts things out for them. I mean, these guys are coming in and spending a lot. And then, you know, he sorts things out for them. Like they'll get the penthouse for free and they'll get a gift card for $8,000-$9,000 for free. Because they're pumping so much money into the casino, they're essentially rewarded for losing money. And they're spending, I mean, they spend millions a year. There's a guy, he's a multimillionaire, one of them, and he lives in Canada. He has like a furniture business or something like that. And his big blowout will be he'll come to Vegas for a week or 2 weeks and he'll just spend money. Do you know what I mean? Like a lot of money. He'll spend $100,000 a night easy.
I mean, the way that they get you, and you're right, is that they will, if say you spend £10,000, they'll give you a free suite in, say, the Caesar Palace. They will also ply you with free drinks. So all drinks are free when you're on the floor.
Yeah, and food.
Yeah, all the food is free.
And stuff like that.
And, you know, there are no windows, so you don't know what time it is. They are pumping oxygen constantly into the room. So you get a slight high, like pure oxygen. And you stay alert. It's quite interesting because IKEA does exactly the same thing. So IKEA, if you notice, no windows in the shops. The route is very clearly laid out that actually 95% of people follow. Like there are arrows that show you which way to go and it moves you. You just go for a plant and you have to go through the whole shop before you get to it. And that's exactly how casinos operate.
Yeah, very cleverly as well. Yeah. But I mean, there's people that are addicted to slot machines and stuff like that. They'll come and spend hundreds a night on slot machines.
It's you know, they say that lottery is the poor man's tax, but actually, I think gambling is also there, and a lottery is a bit of gambling. But you know, you kind of get people who are obsessed because they think they can win millions, and that's where this dollar auction theory comes in, that they'll spend millions of pounds chasing the next million, the marginal million. And at the end, when they get to that number of, say, £1 million, they think, well, I've only lost £1 million. It's crazy.
Yeah. I wonder how some people would feel if they could rewind to the first national lottery in the UK. And if you could sort of tap them on the shoulder as future you and past them and say, by the way, I've just come from 2018, don't ever buy a lottery ticket. Put a pound in a jar every time you want to buy a ticket. And just wait. I wonder how much money.
I think it's human nature to gamble. We are risk takers. We want, and also it's human nature to find the lowest, not the lowest common denominator, is to find the easiest route to success, right? So people would pay up to 50 quid on lottery tickets a week. In the hope of winning £1 million.
Yeah, because it's the path of least resistance.
Least effort for maximum gain. which is what they think. And you know, and the lottery people are very clever in the sense that they'll publish the names, they'll show people how much they can win. So this couple who wins 100 million, they're now, you know, in the Forbes top 100 millionaires, the Times millionaires list, etc.
Well, you look at the radio adverts and stuff where they say, you know, oh, have you seen my keys? Have you tried the bedroom? No. The lounge? No. The dining room? No. The library? No. The cinema? No. Have you checked the swimming pool room? And then it will just say Euro Millions. Nicer problems to have.
That's amazing.
And
that's really like, clever advertising. Fuck off.
Oh, it's very, very clever.
But I think also the press don't help, because what they do is they really sensationalize these millionaires, and they'll say, oh, this couple has won 100 million. They are now richer than Robbie Williams, who's had a 20-year career. They're now richer than, you know, this person who's a well-known businessman.
Yeah. They did one, I think a guy won like a multi-state rollover, and they said, you know, he's basically four or five people off of Bill Gates.
But also everyone wants to be lucky, right? And the lottery is the ultimate luck, pursuit of luck. Everyone wants to be that person that's like rub of the green, you know, the luck of the Irish, that kind of, it's that notion of chasing. It's a bit like, it is like drug addiction, because you're chasing that high and you'll keep doing it and doing it and doing it and doing it. And at some point it becomes an addiction, to the point that you can't stop, because you've put in so much money into it that you just have to keep going. Because if you stop, you realize how much you've lost. And that's the sad thing, is that once you start on that slippery slope, it's very difficult to come out of it.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's kind of interesting to see what happens to these gambling firms. And I wonder how advertisement will actually... or lack thereof, advertisement will hit their their profit lines. But I can't imagine it will be massive, to be honest with you.
I just wonder if gambling will ever be outlawed, because I'm not sure how profitable it is for governments. What's the taxation on it? Because they're almost indefinitely all offshore accounts.
Yeah.
So when does it become lucrative enough for a government to carry on?
Well, I mean, you know, this is the interesting thing, is that actually I think the government turned a blind eye for a very long time. And now that it's become an epidemic, they have to sort of step in and show their strength. Ultimately, they let these guys get away with it. Really.
Yeah. Well, it's like the smoking ban. You know, some people are just in the good lads club, aren't they? There's obviously a conservative peer somewhere, or a Tory, you know, do you know what I mean? There's a peer somewhere who's got his fingers and toes in some gambling outlets. I mean, did you hear about, you know, when the smoking ban came in and it got passed through government? They're like, oh, yes, but there are, I think, like two or three good lads clubs in London where Tory peers like to go and sit after Parliament, and they can go and smoke in there legally in a bar.
There are special rooms in the House of Commons, in the Parliament, where you can smoke. So, you know, it's not banned everywhere. Yeah. I mean, they cite security issues as the main issue. But there are places in the Parliament, in the UK Parliament, which is a smoke-free country, where you can smoke. Just moving on slightly away from that, only slightly. Did we talk about the missionary guy landing on Sentinel Island and being shot? Not shot, but he was shot with arrows.
He was shot with projectiles. Yeah. No, we didn't. Why don't you tell the good listener. Tell our listener. Tell them the story.
So basically, this guy from America, obviously he's going to be American, who was Bible mad, went, he bribed some fishermen to take him to the Sentinel Island. Now, the Sentinel Island is an island which is inhabited by about 20,000 people. I think, if not 2,000 people, and they are primitive in the current definition of primitive, in the sense that they are living in very modest means. That's about. Yeah, they're very much isolated. So the Salins off the coast of India, and no one has been there for hundreds of years, I want to say. No one actually stepped onto the island. So when there was a massive massive monsoon in India, they actually flew a plane to check on the Sentinelese people to see if they actually survived, just check if they're okay. It's also illegal to go on this island. Anyway, so they flew a plane over, and the Sentinelese people started shooting arrows at it. Yeah.
It was a helicopter, wasn't it? And they started shoot that.
The reason being as to why they are so aggressive towards immigrants and Brexiteers will probably rejoice over this. Yeah, it's fucking right. is because hundreds of years ago, a British traveller, obviously British, went to the island, started measuring their heads, and they welcomed him and accepted him, and he started doing some weird tests on them, and then he took like an old guy and a young kid on the boat with them to take them to England to study. The old guy died. We also have to realize that these people don't really have the same immunity system as we do. So they are susceptible to way more diseases, which we've developed immunity to. So the reason why they're so aggressive is because they were once bitten, twice shy kind of thing. So this guy bribed some fishermen to take him to the Sentinel Island. They basically said, you know what, we're gonna stay here. Here's a little boat. You can take yourself to the island. And they just sat there and watched him being pummeled with arrows. Now, the fucking ludicrous nature of this all is that this guy thought that these people, the Sentinelese people, needed Christ in their life. And that's why they were... and he was so convinced that this is what they needed. They needed Christianity in their life, that he was going to go over there and preach them the happiness of the Bible, and he got killed for it. Ugh.
So he was a martyr.
He's an idiot. That's what he was. I'm sure some people think he's a martyr, but he's just an idiot, isn't he?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm sure he wrote or said somewhere that he'd been to the island before. But, you know, why would you do it?
You're an idiot.
It's mental. I wouldn't do it. If someone said, do you want to go to this island? Which island? Sentinel Island. Pretty sure it's illegal. That'd be all right.
No. I mean, for me,
I'm good.
The preposterous nature of this guy thinking that he knew best and what's better for these people speaks more volumes of him than of them killing him.
It's very arrogant. It's very arrogant. I don't want to speak ill of the dead, and it's a shame that he's
and I'm sure all he wanted to do was the good, but it's a very fucking American way of saying you live a wrong way of life, you lead a wrong way of life. And this is how you should look.
Yeah.
It's very arrogant. Yeah. Anyway, that was just a light sidebar, because I just thought it's quite an interesting thing that no one's been to the island in years, and this poor kid goes over there to preach to them and they fucking shoot him to death. Which is what, to be fair, Jesus Christ has predicted in the Bible. So maybe he was Jesus. Have you ever read the Bible?
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, classic.
No.
It's a classic story. Boy meets girl. Girl gets impregnated by God, etc.
Yeah. Star-crossed lovers.
Oh, God. So, one for the ages, that. Moving on to tech. So I mentioned planned obsolescence, and you were fairly... I think you knew what it is, but you didn't know the actual term for it. But let me ask you this. You have a new iPhone.
Yeah.
Have you noticed any change in the performance of it when the new iOS came out?
I haven't actually downloaded the new iOS yet. Simply because I have learnt the lesson before, where it makes your phone go super slow. And other people have told me, well, when I've said to them, oh, are you going to do the update? Because, you know, that's what men talk about. Are you going to do the update? No. Yeah, exactly. Classic men, locker room talk.
No. Locker room talk about Trump is talking about how you grab women by the pussy. That's locker room. I have never talked about...
Oh, sorry, yeah.
I've never been in a locker room and I've said to my guys, you know what? You know what I do? I fucking love to grab women by the vaginas. They fucking love it, mate. They fucking love it.
bit of genital grabbing. You can't.
I think what women don't realize, and what a lot of people don't realize, and this is why his fucking whole defense of, oh, it's just locker room talk, is that, and you know this, the thing that people, that we do in locker rooms is that we shiftily change to make sure that no one sees our cocks.
Yes.
It's dead quiet. No one really speaks. And then people go to take a shower, come out, get changed, and then leave. No one sits around and talks about how they fucking rape women. You know, whenever I've been to the locker room, I've never heard of a guy saying, oh, lads, went on a date last night. Fucking hell, she was hot. Grabbed her by the vagina. That was great. And everyone just or like laughing with
him. Sealed the deal.
It just doesn't happen. We don't talk in locker rooms. It's a very, like... And if you talk in locker rooms, and if you lock eye contact, you're in the long locker room because, well, if you're straight. Anyway, sorry. You were saying. So you didn't update because you heard that it slows down your phone. And that's exactly what planned obsolescence is. So if you think about even housing, if you think how... The House of Parliament, for example, has lasted for so long without crumbling down, and yet you see these Barrett homes being built, and they probably won't last 100 years. And being in the industry, I know that there's a 100-year... They're building for 100 years. They're not building for forever. They're building for 100 years. So there's planned obsolescence in something as crucial as housing. Yeah. So iPhones are obviously coming out each year, and I reckon there's a planned obsolescence for them to be only valid for 2 years. So two cycles.
Sure. Probably.
But that's fucked up, isn't it? I mean, they were caught. I'm not sure if you caught up on this yourself, when they were throttling performance of some phones, older phones. Did you hear that? So if you had an iPhone 6S, for example, if your battery got below a certain level of health, they would throttle the performance of your phone so that it fired slower to make sure that the battery didn't overwork. Now, that's their explanation of it. We did it to protect you and your battery to make sure that your phone doesn't explode. They didn't tell anyone this.
Right.
They didn't show anyone this. They just did it. Obviously, some tech guy or girl or whatever found out and posted the results on the internet. And the whole internet went fucking wild. Because obviously what everyone was suspecting of Apple doing, which is deliberately throttling phones, was actually happening. So this is a conspiracy theory, which was proven right. And and the issue there is obviously, well, how do you repair trust after that? If you're deliberately making my phone slower so I go out and buy a new phone, then you're deliberately making your product shit. Now, one way to do it is like you doing it, which is you just don't update, but then you don't get all the new features. And this is where they get you, is that if you want to stay up to date with the latest technology and the latest software, you have to update. But what the trick that they do is that, well, you don't have to update your phone, just update the software. It's fine. But what the software does is that it clogs up your phone, because obviously the software, you can sort of understand it, because software gets more sophisticated. Yeah. So it requires more horsepower, which requires better parts, et cetera, et cetera. So you can only get the true latest experience of the software by getting new hardware. But the issue is, for someone like you who keeps a phone for two, three years, by the third year, your phone is keeping what is alive for 2 hours a day, 3 hours a day.
Yeah. It's not something that I ever thought of before. And it's only something that you know, I've recently been thinking about, and it really is, you can sort of see it a little bit by saying, you know, the software can't keep, or sorry, the processor on your current phone won't keep up with the necessary processing power needed with the new software. But surely then they shouldn't make it available for your phone. Do you know what I mean? Shouldn't be available for, say, I mean, I've got an 8 Plus and you've got a 10. So any operating system that's, you know, is going to be too powerful for, you know, below the 8 Plus, it shouldn't be available.
I agree, but then people will say, well, why am I being deprived of these updates? Just you know, I think...
Yeah, but it's simple. There's a simple explanation. You're being deprived because your phone's not got the necessary processing power. Done. If you want this technology, then buy a new phone.
I think it is as easy as that. I think the issue that... the reason why I use Apple products is because actually I find that they keep... If you manage them well, they keep their life for quite a long time. Your last phone was the iPhone 5S before this one? Yeah.
My last phone?
6S.
6S.
So you upgraded to 8 Plus, which is 2 years, right? So over 2 years, that's not bad innings. That's not a bad go at the overall experience. But I've got, you know, my girlfriend's mum still uses a 5S, which is now 4 years old, and it still works. It still works fine. My point is that the reason why I use Apple products is because they actually keep their age well. You just need to know what to do. The issue for the average consumer is that they probably don't know what to do. They don't know how to manage their phone properly to prolong its life, which is fair enough.
Yeah.
But I don't know how you morally it was wrong that they didn't tell anyone that they were doing this. They were throttling performance to appease the battery life. But I'm not sure. Would you have been mad if they came out and said, "Oh, hey, buddy, we're going to stop. We're going to make your phone slightly slower to make sure that your battery works fine. Are you okay with that?" And you could opt in or opt out. I'm pretty sure it'd be much better than them just doing it in the background, and then you finding out through whatever means to say, "Oh, actually, those fuckers."
Yeah, definitely.
What we thought was true is true.
Yeah, they probably could have gone about it better.
This is the issue with electric cars, isn't it?
Do you mean in terms of battery
and
life?
Technology? Your car is not the most technologically advanced car, but it still drives. So how old is your car? 10, 15 years?
So
your car is 15 years old and it still drives. It doesn't drive as it did when it was new, but it still drives. Yeah. I wonder how well a Tesla will drive after 15 years and the cost that you will have to spend in order to fix it, upgrade the battery, replace the battery, whatever is needed.
I would imagine that there would probably be better trade-in deals because the recycle ability of an electric car would probably be better than of a combustible engine car.
In what sense? That you can recycle the lithium ion battery and the...
Maybe not the battery itself, but you can certainly use the wiring, you know, screens and you know, strip apart a lot of the working parts. You can, you know, take the shell apart and essentially build a new car out of it. Do you know what I mean? Or I don't know. Or you can do it up and take it all out yourself and then put new stuff in. It's not like you've got to drop a new engine into it. You've just got to take the computer out and redo it. People build their own computers now. So why not build their own computer for their, well, not build their own computer, then, but you know what I mean?
The main issue with a Tesla is the battery. If that goes, you can't drive. So if you take a same kind of, if we take an iPhone as a, and sort of extrapolate that to a Tesla, if your iPhone battery life reduces significantly after 2 years, let's say a Tesla's battery life reduces after 5 years, 10 years, it's not going to be as easy to replace the battery in a Tesla as it would in your Peugeot. Even the
well, yeah, that's fine.
Unless they make it
as it may, I'm still saving money. I'm still saving money in the long run by not paying for fuel or car tax. True.
It just depends whether, let's say you spare you save. I don't know how much do you fuel per week.
Probably.
So £40 a week. Pounds? Let's say £50 a week per year. That's £2,600 a year. Times that by five, that's £13,000. If you can replace your battery for less than £13,000, then you've won, but only marginally. So you know you need to sort of change it for $6,500 to make a real saving on your fuel expenditure. I don't know. I question how electric cars will be, because it will have to become, because of its electronic nature and less mechanical nature, it will have to become more of a consumer product rather than a utility like cars are now. They'll have to become like where you just sort of you know, I think the thing that Tesla should do is not sell cars, but lease cars for 2 years. And get people to upgrade and incrementally increase the upgrade charge. Do you see what I mean? So then you're not burdening someone with that anxiety of trying to sell your Tesla at 10 years of age with a shit battery life. If you just lease, if you lease your cars, then actually everyone can still drive a car. They'll pay a monthly 350, 500 quid cost for it. And they don't have to have the anxiety of trying to sell it when it's actually going to be probably unsellable, or you won't get the money that you thought you were going to get. Because, you know, I can imagine that depreciation rate for Teslas is much higher than it is for a normal car. Like, a Tesla is a luxury car, right? So it's 60 grand upwards, Tesla Model S. So equivalent car would be something like a Mercedes E-Class. I think a Mercedes E-Class can sell much better after 10 years than a Tesla can. I would bet money on that. Talking of gambling.
Yeah. Do you think if you take into consideration the what do you think it would do to the second hand market?
Well, this is going to be the big issue, isn't it, for electric cars, for everyone. How is that going to be affected? Obviously, if what I'm saying is right, Tesla cars will be much cheaper. Electric cars in general on the second hand market will be much cheaper because of this impending issue of battery life and software, and therefore what will happen is just cars will just be cheaper. Because what I will do is, you know, if I was buying a Tesla, a secondhand Tesla, after, let's say, 15-12 years, is say ask the seller when was the battery replaced, and you know he'll say never, and I'll say okay, well, it's going to cost me 10 grand to replace the battery, so I'm going to knock 10 grand off the asking price. You know, wouldn't you do that?
No, you probably won't.
But you would do that, wouldn't you? You would say to them, well, mate, if...
Oh, sorry. Yeah, of course. I would say, mate, you know, where's the value in it? Because the battery's going to die in about 10 minutes. Why am I spending an extra 10 grand on something that I'm then going to spend another 10 grand fixing?
Yeah, and it's not like you're getting all the benefits of a new Tesla, right? You're getting a 10-year-old, 12-year-old Tesla, and you have to replace the battery as well. So you might as well ask for a massive discount.
Yeah. I'd never thought about it before. In terms of, you know, getting a electric car secondhand, it will certainly make the market a lot more interesting to watch, because it will just, you know, it will be constant. I'm not sure if it will plummet. I think maybe more people will bring out, you know, electric cars. There will still be combustible engine cars in 50 years' time. Of course. Of course. We're too obsessed with fucking making things go bang. You know what I mean? There are people out there who they love a good engine. Yeah, they love a bit of noise. They love to feel the throb of the accelerator cable.
Very homoerotic.
Pedal, sorry. Yeah, for some people. For me, a car is just something that I get in and go to work to.
A personal image.
Yeah, a luxury. Yeah, I clean my car and I make sure that it's tidy inside, but if someone's going to come up to me and say, oh, mate, what are you doing driving a Peugeot 306? They'll say, well,
if you don't mind me asking,
and I can put stuff
how much
in
did you buy your car for?
So fuck off. I bought it for the princely sum.
So for that
£500,
how much do you think you put into it for repairs, etc., right after you bought it? Did it need anything doing? Right, okay.
Nothing.
And originally it would have cost, what, 10 grand, 15 grand? So it reduced by...
Probably something like that, yeah.
Let's say it was 10 grand. It reduced by £9,500 in 10 years.
Yeah.
Wow, that's quite phenomenal, actually.
What is that about? 8% a year or something? Yeah, it's a big drop. But, you know, technology's got better, and it's not a massively sought-after car. It's not a classic. You know, some cars from the 70s are still
appreciating
in value.
But that's dictated by rarity,
because of what they are.
They're limited numbers, et cetera, et cetera. They're one-off pieces, whatever they are.
Yeah. No, of course. But some of them were also because they're cult classics, aren't they? Like, you know, Volkswagen Golf Mark One, or like a BMW M3 Alpina or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, my point is that actually what will happen is that, you know, you bought your car after 10 years, it was 500 quid. The first Tesla, when there'll be so many other electric cars on the road, which are going to be way more sophisticated than the first Tesla. So in 10 years' time, when Tesla 3 will be 10 years old, and there'll be loads of Volvos and Audis and BMWs and Mercedes electric cars coming out, which will be at the same kind of luxury bracket, suddenly your Tesla is going to be probably worth about 500 quid. Because the battery, like, if the battery is an issue, you're not going to buy it because you can't drive it. And if the battery is an issue on your car, you just get a new battery and you install it yourself. You can't do that with a Tesla.
Yeah. Well, maybe
absolutely.
One day they'll make it to be so.
The cars that are being released now, it's sort of it's uncharted territory, because what will happen is that, you know, if you can't get a battery, if your battery is in any way damaged, or if it's worn out to the point that it's just not keeping charge for more than 2 hours, you're sort of thinking, well, is it even worth it? Am I just buying a massive paperweight?
Yeah, it's something that will have to be addressed as that particular market evolves, and as that technology evolves, and you know, when those cars become more popular and garages have to that was the dog. You know, when garages and automobile shops have to you know, change from what they do now with getting all oily and horrible, digging around in working parts, then they'll have to change to specializing in ECU components and, you know, very few working parts, and battery changes. You know, I think the technology will then change again to make people's lives easier, because, you know, it's not feasible to take a Tesla to only a Tesla accredited garage. Do you know what I mean? It's going to have to be more diverse, and, you know, essentially people are going to have to be able to do it easier. The battery might still cost 5 grand or something like that, but, you know, what's the battery life on them at the moment? 200 miles?
Oh, I don't know.
No, I meant a lifetime. What's the lifetime of a battery? I assume it's going to be longer.
You'd hope so.
Years.
But then, you know, it's just a load of lithium-ion batteries. So it's not even something that's, you know, sophisticated to the point that, you know, we were talking about the new fluoride batteries that are being proposed, which will keep charge for a week and you wouldn't have to do anything. So it's kind of, you know, solid state fluoride batteries. So this is technology that's been used for tens of years. So it's kind of, you know, if it's technology that's been used for decades, it's not going to be... This is the thing that my point is that Tesla hasn't reinvented the battery. They just put it in under a car.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They put a big bank of them
under
a car. So
interestingly, this fluoride battery can keep its charge up to 8 times longer than the battery in use today.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty remarkable.
Yeah, I think if they crack the battery, because the battery is the main thing, right? Like
of course.
With traditional cars, with mechanical cars, it's more about the engine. But the engine, you know, I think it lasts slightly more. Well, your engine, for example, is 10 to 15 years old.
And has a lot of
there you go. So that's impressive on it already. But yeah, I mean, no, it's interesting. Talking of technological giants, have you done your shopping yet for Christmas?
No.
Do you know how you're going to do it, or?
Not yet. I'm not going to go the traditional route, or the modern traditional route of shopping online. I will be.
So you'll be supporting the local high street.
Feet on the pavement shopping. In Germany, yeah.
Oh God. Well, enjoy that until March 29th. Brexit, mate.
What is that?
The transition period.
Okay. I'll still be allowed in Germany.
Nah, of course.
I'll still be allowed, mate.
But that's interesting because I've done all of mine via Amazon, right? And I did it all in one day. I got everything I needed.
Sure, of course you have.
And then it got me thinking how actually massive the effect Amazon has had on shopping. What would have taken me 5 hours previously over 3 days has taken me 20 minutes in the comfort of my own home. It'll be delivered, guaranteed, before Christmas. It'll be gift-wrapped, and it would be perfect. It's just, it is astounding what Amazon has done for the retail world, and you can see it now because there's so many retail shops which are closing down or closed, or retail streets which are part empty. I wonder how retail will evolve, because there are still some things which you want to have, which you want to touch and try and hold and sort of measure on yourself. And I wonder how, you know, augmented reality will change that. Did I tell you there's an app, I think it's called Zozo. And what you do is you sign up to this company called Zozo. They send you a suit, a morph suit, which you put on. And because it's skin tight, it's got loads of dots on it. And you sort of you film yourself spinning around in one spot, and it takes measurements of your body.
Mm-hmm.
And then what it does is Zozo has a shop in it.
Right.
And they sell their own made, their own brand T-shirts, jeans, chinos, shirts. So what they've done is they said, okay, well, the biggest issue for clothes, buying clothes online, is that you can't try them on at the place. You have to order them. If they don't fit, you have to send them back. That costs me, blah, 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 blah. So they've bypassed that by saying, okay, well, what if we take your measurements as accurately as we can technologically now? And then what we can do is when you want to buy a T-shirt, it will be perfect fit. No matter what your shape, no matter what your size, it'll be a perfect fit. So once Zozo takes your measurements, it will only give you the sizes that you need. So there is no searching for the size. And so, you know, I thought it's quite, I thought it was quite a really nifty concept.
Yeah, it's interesting.
In what sense?
It's a very odd concept. It's, you know, I can't really... Well, you know, it's a bit weird seeing yourself in augmented reality with a T-shirt on. It's not necessarily true to life. It's a bit like that app that you can get on your phone where you want to see what your walls will look like painted in a certain colour, or... Do you know what I mean? It's not... It's augmented reality, so, you know, it's, I think the clue's in the title a little bit, where reality is augmented. So it's not 100% true to life, do you know what I mean? So you're not necessarily going to look that good, or as good as you think, or it may not fit, because the, you know, the how good is this technology in engaging how a material is going to react?
But the whole point is that it measures your body so accurately that the clothes are tailored to your body without you even having to do anything. Right. Yeah, yeah. So say your size is somewhere in between small and medium for T-shirts. What Zozo does is it tells you, okay, so your body's abnormally shorter than the average body. So what we'll do is we can give you, we can tailor make a shirt for you, which will fit you perfectly around the sleeves, around the length of the shirt, the shoulders. Right. It's really interesting, because this is the one thing that's been missing from the retail world in shopping for clothes, is that you have to, you know, when I go to shop for clothes, I go and I try clothes on to make sure A, it suits me visually, but also B, it actually fits me, because I don't have I work out at the gym. My shoulders are wider than the average person. So, for example, I can't go into Topshop, and I'm sure you can't go into Topshop and buy yourself what is considered a medium T-shirt or a large T-shirt. Exactly, because they tailor them to a certain style, certain body shape. What Zozo does is we don't have a body shape that we design our clothes to. We just we create the T-shirt, for example, that fits you, no matter what your size and shape is. No.
Yeah.
It's just their own stuff.
Is it branded? So it's just...
I sent you their website.
So, all right, fine. I like it.
I mean, they've got... So, you know, I think at the moment it's just in the US, but they've got... You know, you can get jeans, right? And it says you can capture the exact measurements of your unique body shape and receive clothing custom fit for you. It doesn't matter what height, what waist size. It's just, it's almost the perfect world where everyone wants, because there's always clothes in, you know, the clothes will never fit you 100%, right? And unless you tailor them. So if you buy your jeans, you know, if you buy them, for example, from Zara, they are automatically designed to fit a 32-inch leg. Now, my leg is 30-inch.
Yeah.
So that means I have to taper them. Same as if I go suit shopping, sure. And that's the biggest bugbear, is I have to get a much wider shoulder than they would for my height, which then makes the length much, much longer. The sleeve length is much longer, and the width of within the waist is much wider. Whereas with something like this, with this kind of technology, you can actually get perfectly fit suits, T-shirts, shirts, jeans immediately for you. I mean, look, this is free advertisement for Zozo. Whoever's listening, they should Zozo. They should definitely check it out. I mean, it's a really interesting. Really interesting concept, and I think the suit is free. So when you sign up to the Zozo app on your iPhone or your Android phone,
go on,
you can get your suit delivered free of charge. So the suit that you buy that measures your body shape and your body's size, I think that's free. So they describe it as. This Fair revolutionary enough. Technology brings 3D body scanning into the home and makes it both accessible and affordable for the first time in history. So this suit has white dots with black dots inside it, and that bounces the measurements into the phone with your camera. So the app has some sort of receivers on it, or some sort of, you know, it, the suit basically measures your body. Each Zozo suit has more than 350 white dots, each of which is unique. These dots serve as fiducial markers, which are essential to our measuring process. As you measure, the Zozo app will take 12 photos of you as you stand facing each hour on the clock and capture where each unique dot is located in space. The algorithm then processes the spatial data and triangulates a 3D rendering of your body based on where each unique white dot was captured in space, more accurate than human tailor measurements. Yeah.
Mate, wow. It's pretty impressive. That's innovation right there.
I don't really know. It's Japanese. Okay. That makes sense. Because it makes sense that it's an Asian country that did it, because Asian sizes are very unique. So what is designed for the Western body will not fit necessarily an Eastern body, because it's much smaller, it's much lighter, blah, blah, blah. So they can't wear a lot of the stuff, like a lot of off-the-shelf stuff, like with, you know, Dolce & Gabbana, for example, because Dolce & Gabbana make most of their stuff specifically for the European market. Yeah. Yeah. So it makes sense that a Japanese did it.
That makes sense. It's interesting.
Exactly. That's fine. Yeah, yeah.
Well, I'll let you say that because you're Asian.
But then my issue is, well,
cool.
Where the fuck are these measurements going to? Who are they going to? And, you know, if someone can steal that information, what else can they steal? And that is what you call a segue, Tom.
Well, thank you very much. Leading up to what could possibly be probably our last topic of the evening, which would be Australia legalizing some legislation, which, how to explain it the easiest way, it basically allows people like the police and other legal services to intercept messages and correspondence that you send and that people send, only in Australia, as a method to counteract terrorism and other illegal activities. So, quite a profound act, actually.
Well, I mean, the interesting thing is that
passed. Don't you think?
From what you've said to me, they want all the companies, all the tech companies, to keep the data in Australia. Is that right?
I'm not sure that that's correct. I think I'm just trying to find it now so I can explain it to you.
I don't really have an issue with that. My point is that it's not like they are using trigger words and only those messages or those calls with those trigger words are recorded. They're recording everything.
No. Well, the caption for this article says Australia passes encryption law every tech expert says will lead to disaster. I shall read it to you. Australia has adopted legislation to create quote-unquote backdoors in encrypted software so police and national security authorities can access online conversations. IT workers and commentators, however, argue the new laws will create a string of unintended consequences that could make Australia a tech pariah, with companies refusing to produce or sell their products in the country. So the law enforcement agencies will be able to basically
the website that I found, they said that they want access to end-to-end encrypted digital communication. So what this means is that at the moment, WhatsApp, for example, is probably the biggest, and Facebook chat. What they do is they create an encrypted digital sort of link between you and me. If we talk on WhatsApp, which means that data that we produce is only visible under that little encryption message, encrypted message. So each message is encrypted either way. So what this means is that normal texts and normal calls are not encrypted in that way, I don't think. Which is why I think they specifically say access to end-to-end encrypted digital communication. So this means that Australian authorities will be able to compel tech companies like Facebook and Apple to make backdoors in their secure messaging platforms, including WhatsApp and iMessage. Cryptographers and privacy advocates who have long been staunch opponents of encryption backdoors on public safety and human rights grounds warn that this legislation poses serious risks and will have a real consequence that reverberate far beyond the land down under. So what they're saying there is that, well, it's not just Australia that will want this, but they'll set a precedent, and it means that UK will want this, US will want this, Canada will want this, New Zealand will want this, etc., etc. So the Five Eyes, which is US, UK, Canada, and New Zealand, have as well as Australia, have lobbied for years for this type of mechanism, for a backdoor that allows intelligence agencies and law enforcement agencies to access private communication, encrypted private communication.
Sure.
What are your thoughts on this? Because when we spoke yesterday, you were you were saying, oh, I don't really care. I mean,
I don't know.
You know, I don't send any racy messages. I don't buy anything racy. Do you think that...
Yeah, that's still my standpoint. I kind of don't have anything to hide, but then, you know, it's not... If there are people out there who don't want their messages to be read, but they're perfectly innocent people, I don't know, I kind of feel like their rights are being violated a bit, potentially.
For the sake of national security, we should sacrifice liberty.
I think in the grand scheme of things, with the way that terrorism and the drugs trade, etc., is evolving... I think in the grand scheme, it's probably a small price to pay. If you're going to say something along the lines of, oh, I'm naked and I want you, or I'm really sorry to hear your dad passed, or, you know, something like that, then, you know, either do it face to face or do it knowing that you're going to be, have that message.
Because the issue that I have is not that, it's not that the CIA is spying on me. I don't have anything to hide. The issue is that they can easily fuck me over by taking something out of context. Equally, that data that they have may easily be hacked and stolen. So the latest one, for example, was the... It wasn't Vodafone. Who was it? I think it was Marriott Hotels. And they had all of their... They had 500 million people's data stolen, or 5 million people's data stolen. Now, that's, on the face of it, seems, well, you know, they know my name, they know my number, fine. But they also have your credit card details. They know where you live, they know your password. They'll know your password to your Marriott account. And if you're lazy like me, you'll have one password for everything. So just on this topic, I get calls, which is scam call, where someone is calling me pretending to be the HMRC, Her Majesty's Revenue and Customs, which is basically the tax man for anyone outside of the UK.
Yeah.
And what they say is, this is the HMRC. It's a robotic voice. This is the HMRC. And they say, you have been... There's a warrant out for your arrest for unpaid taxes. And the call, so the number that they use is an actual HMRC number. So they clone the number. They call you, you pick up, and you say hello. And then this voice says that there's a warrant out for your arrest. Please press 1 if you want to speak to one of our advisors. So you press 1, and you get connected to a woman, and she asks all of your details. So, can you please confirm your address? Yes. Can you please confirm your national insurance number? Yes. Can you please confirm your date of birth? Yes. Can you please confirm your full name? Yes. And then they say, okay, well, you've got a tax outstanding of £200. They say, would you like to pay it now? You say, yeah, fine. So you give them your card number. So if I didn't know this, if I wasn't savvy enough to get this phone calling me, pick it up, and this robotic voice came on, I quickly Googled the number, and it said, this is a well-known scam. Don't answer it. If you have any queries, call the HMRC directly. So hang up and call them back, because it is a legitimate HMRC number. Call the number back and ask them if they have any issues with your tax returns. If I didn't know this, if I wasn't smart enough to do this, I would have been scammed. So think how many people, old people, who don't know that this is a scam, get called, like, they lose all their shit. There's a similar scam in the States where they pretend to be the whatever the equivalent is. The tax man calls them and says, you know, you're going to be under. Yeah. So it is the IRS calls them IRS. Up, supposedly, and says, oh, by the way, there's a warrant out for your arrest, blah, blah, blah. Please press 1 to speak to one of our advisors. This is fucked up, because they must have stolen my information from somewhere in order to call me, to know my name, because when I pressed 1, I pretend to be a Russian spy. Hello, this is agent number 4. It was actually quite so. I was at work and I put it on loudspeaker. I was around some people having lunch. And this robotic voice called me. I pressed 1, got connected to the advisor on the next on the other end. Put on my loudspeaker and said, hello, my name is Agent 4. Agent 3, the crow is flying high. And the woman on the other end was like, hi, who am I speaking to? I said, this is Agent number 4. Who are you? I said, is this Dimitri Williamson? And I was like, what the fuck? How do they know my name? That's fucking scary. They know my name. They know my number. Jesus. Because it connected to them. So they must know my number because they called me. They know my name. What the fuck else do they know?
Well, obviously not that much, because otherwise they would have taken your
yeah, but how far is that time? How far is that incident where
give it to them?
At the moment, they just know your name and your number, and then.
Well, I think there's probably going to be some sort of a development where cards become less necessary, and primitive things like. You know what I mean? 16-digit codes for your bank account number and your card number. They'll all be obsolete, and it'll be an ever-changing block of numbers. You know what I mean? And at any one time, it will change. So
what you're describing there is cryptocurrency, random, basically.
And it will change again. Yes and no, because I'm not saying that your money becomes crypto. And you're on the blockchain. All I'm saying is, instead of a card, you have maybe an app on your phone that you can open biometrically, and then to get your, you know, you don't have a card, you have an app. You open it up, and you have a one-time card number. You know, so we're changing your card number now. So you have a one-time number, and you type that in, and it will. You know, you'll get a two-way system code. You know, are you doing this purchase? You click yes, and then that's it. Your code's gone. Your account number. You're not your account number, but your card number has changed again to another 10, 15-digit number, and you don't ever have one. It's not like I have a credit card with a number on it, a debit card with a number on it. Do you know what I mean? A cryptocurrency is on a blockchain, though, isn't it? So it's slightly different, because every coin is differently encrypted, and you can't get one coin without having the one before it, because they're all linked together, aren't they? That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying you still have your money, but instead of having a debit card and you're online, and you put, you know, 4751, et cetera, et cetera. You go to your phone, you go to NatWest, or you go to RBS, whatever, and you type in, you press card.
Yeah, but that's essentially
for that specific transaction.
A slightly devolved version of a cryptocurrency, in the sense that, because, But that, I think
devolved.
There is technology like that, that happens now. So, for example, Apple Pay creates a custom transaction per payment. So it still uses your bank card, but when you pay something, that transaction. Right. Is unique, and it's only unique to you and the shop.
Yeah, but that's that doesn't matter because it still uses your card details.
No, I know. But what I'm saying is, what they've done is, instead of changing your card details every time,
get rid of the card.
They just change that they have an encrypted transaction number, which is only relevant to those two parties. So if a third party wants to piggyback and siphon money off, they can't. Which is essentially what you said, which is you have a card and it just changes the numbers all the time.
Okay. But that way you eliminate anyone ever being able to get hold of your card details.
Something of the past. I think what you'll have is an app, like you said. And instead of having a card, you'll have a chip in your hand or whatever, or your phone or your watch. So I pay with my watch now a lot. I've got an Apple Watch, by the way, and it negates me from having any cards. So what they'll do is they'll just get rid of the card, and they'll just have your money in an account without any cards whatsoever. I think that's where it's going. At least I hope that's where it's going, because I hate having like 15 cards, not 15, but like 3. But you know what I mean.
Yeah, but I do. I hate
having cash on me as well.
It does
I go out
it's
now.
Very unnecessary.
If I'm going out food shopping, I'll go out without my wallet, and I'll just I just have my phone and my I won't buy anything more than I wouldn't exceed 30 quid, anyway. And there's been a number of times when I've forgotten my wallets at home and I left to go to work, and I've just used Apple Pay all the time, and. You know, touch wood, it's been absolutely fine. I haven't needed my cards on me at all. Sometimes I can go through weeks without needing my card to pay for anything, unless it's over 30 quid. Yes, but otherwise I don't need them. But very rarely do I make a purchase which is above £30. Oh, and if you want to go and see Tom,
unless you're buying train tickets,
please.
To come down and see me.
Tom, do you want to tell them where to find you?
Well, you can find me at the same place as Dimitri, which is our office, our digital office.
Yes.
YarnSpinnersPodcast@gmail.com.
Twitter, we're on there.
Where else can they find
Podcast Dimitri? Yarn or something like that. YarnSpinners1 on Facebook.
Boom. Yeah.
I think we're going to have Raul Cabrera soon.
That's us.
We're going to have a Christmas special. Episode as well. Well, I think next year it's looking like we're going to have quite a few interesting guests on, which is good. So thanks for anyone who's listened to us 509 times.
Yes.
Repeat. True.
That's just
be just you. But no, it's been great. We've had.
It's not.
Yeah, true. It's only been 6 months, hasn't it?
It's been a good half a year so far.
So we've been listened to 509 times.
Yeah, well, 4.
So for all those 509 listeners, and I will assume that they're individual listeners.
Yeah.
It's my prerogative. Thank you very much. And next year we'll have a lot of interesting stuff.
Sure. And we'll have loads of advertising just to piss you off.
Probably
we'll have a few betting companies.
Although, just out of principle, I won't have them on. Dollar Shave Club, if you wanna contact us. Cash App, if you wanna contact us for some for some sponsorship. Do let us know, because we're on mighty 509. Everyone, thank you very much. And Tommy,
see you
speak
later.
To you soon.